Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Midweek Takeaway, where we explore the depths of investment strategies and unveil the dynamics of the market. I'm your host, Phil Carroll, and today I'm joined by Charles Archer, investor, journalist, and financial analyst, who will be conducting a fascinating interview with Colin Bird, Executive Chairman at Galileo Resources. In today's episode, we focus on Galileo Resources, a company making significant waves in the multi-commodity domain, especially with its copper projects in Zambia. Galileo's approach is quite intriguing. They specialize in acquiring assets that were previously explored by major companies, capitalizing on the extensive data left behind. This strategy not only positions them uniquely in the market, but also aligns with the economic and political shifts that enhance mining operations in regions like Zambia. As we dive into this discussion, Charles will help us uncover the intricacies of Galileo's investment strategies, their risk management, and the potential rewards their unique business model could bring, especially in the current global economic climate. We'll also touch on the broader implications of their projects that span across Zimbabwe, Botswana, the US, and South Africa. So without further ado, let's hand it over to Charles to kick off this insightful conversation with Colin.
Hello, Colin. How are you today?
I'm well, thank you. And how are you?
Not too shabby. I mean, working, fighting with the tax man, you know, all of these fun things you get to do as a freelancer. What have you been up to the past few days?
I've been up to my neck in basically consolidating where I can, acquiring, making plans to acquire where I can, fielding interest, and it's probably one of the most intense periods I've had in my entire mining career. All of us, the markets don't reflect it, but the activity reflects it. Everybody's waking up to this copper deficit, and everybody wants to position themselves. And you know what it's like, you know, it's not easy. Somebody used the expression earning cats. I think that was not a bad expression.
Indeed.
So I'm glad to say I'm working very hard. We're in sort of very difficult times, so there's not always a connection between work and results, but I think we all agree that, you know, the more you practice, sometimes the better you get, you know, and certainly the better the results you get. So I'm practicing very hard.
Well, do you know, I mean, obviously you're positioned very well in both copper and Zambia, which is where a lot of my interests lie as well. I was talking to a couple of people based out there at the moment. Everyone's trying to get licenses now that the political tide has turned, and there's nothing good left is what it feels like. And what there is good, people have to kind of fight for. It feels very much like the scales have turned, maybe. Would you say it's becoming a much more friendly place to be?
Yeah, the scales have very much turned. And this president has got a personal ambition, you know, which he's stated for 3 million tons of contained copper. Copper has always been the mainstay of Zambia. And they've done very well on the agricultural side of life as well. That's picked up quite a lot. This new president is very proactive. You will see Mopani has been pulled out of the fire by IRH, the Abu Dhabi investment company. And Vedanta have been welcomed back to KCM as well. So
yeah,
there's a lot happening, and the planes are full again. You know, I've got a personal sort of a very, very high regard for Zambia. It's a formative part of my career when I was working on the mines. That's when I left the UK, that's where I went to work, and I worked on those big mines and enjoyed it. Then, of course, I founded, you know, a system to get First Quantum going and sold them the Kalambila project. So yeah. Zambia, in no small way, has figured very much in my life personally and business-wise. So I'm very happy to see it. And, you know, contrast that with poor old First Quantum, they are losing their Panama mine, which hopefully they'll get back after a $10.3 billion investment. Look at the president in Chile, just turned out 4 or 5 licenses, and is for a country which is, you know, used to be 50% of the world's copper, and now virtually put in an embargo on mining. So the effect there is dreadful on existing mines and would-be mines. In fact, they've all been shelved. So I think Zambia is well-placed at the right time with the right political people attitude to actually take advantage of what we all think is going to be turnaround, and not a turnaround. It's all, the copper industry has always been relatively strong, but we're expecting big things for copper. And there are those who say that, well, you know, they've been mining in copper since 1900. There can't be much left. You know, Charles, it's not even started. There's concepts and models, particularly in the Northwest. I mean, we get no credit for it, but I feel in terms of achievement, I feel it's one of the biggest milestones in my life, and there's no acknowledgement for it whatsoever. But academia has always suggest that the copper belt, traditional copper belt, might not be the situation in the Northwest. And Robert Friedland, of course, found the Kamoa mine, brought it into production, found the deposit, brought it into production. Now it's the second richest mine in the world. And that Western Foreland, everybody, not quite naively, thought it stopped at the fence, you know, that God put the copper in after mankind.
Of course they did. And that, we drew a line and that was that, didn't we?
No, I don't think I won the Nobel Prize for the thought, but nonetheless, a proof of concept was African pioneer and adventure with First Quantum. So that's why I'm being so busy in the Northwest. And then in the central part there's the iron copper IOCG model, iron oxide copper gold model, where there's been a big sale to the Chinese recently, the only proven model, which used to be BHP and a company called Blackthorn Resources. So I'd postulate, and the people would be quite astounded by the remarks, is that it's hardly explored in Zambia. And that might sound ridiculous to some, but to sort of illustrate this, that, you know, those Mopani mines were started in 1925. 100 years later, they're still going with 50 years mine life. That doesn't give anybody much motivation to go out exploring concepts, does it?
Right.
And it's the same with the Kalambila we found. 1.5 billion tons, Charles, we found. You know, that'll last quite a long time for anybody. So if you turn the clock back, as you say, 4 years, it wasn't that people weren't welcome, that there was that misnomer that the existing copper belt was it, and there wasn't much opportunity. Obviously, what's that fate is changed.
Yeah, sorry. I mean, I would guess also the taxation a few years ago. Now they've changed the tax code a little bit and it seems a little bit more friendly as well, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, that's been a pendulum as well. That's been a pendulum as well, Charles, for 30 years. Sometimes elastic one way too far, and so then they let the elastic go the other way. And that's the problem with these host governments, that they've got, you know, they've got the problem to create jobs. They've got to keep their economies growing. They've got to maintain a big level and return on their indigenous interests. At the same time, they've got to keep mining companies. Who's going to do the mining's risky, but the exploration is even more risky.
Yeah, of course it is.
Yeah, so it's fine balance for governments, and Zambia seems to have achieved it.
They have done. I mean, well, stability is what you want. I mean, a flat corporation tax, I believe, at 30%. They're the mineral royalty, but you can deduct it from a corporation tax. There's all sorts of really interesting incentives for people to start copper mining or copper exploring in the country. And yeah, this is the thing. You need to have that long-term balance because, you know, whether it's Galileo Extract or whoever, the time between when you're like exploring a greenfield site to putting down a mine can be years and years. And they seem to have, you know, finally decided, because Zambia in particular has decided, right, this is what we're going to do. And this president has said, yeah, we're going to stick to this strategy, come and invest in the country. And it seems to be going that way. Yeah, which is great. Now, obviously, talking about Galileo Resources predominantly today, I mean, I kind of split the assets that you have into, you know, Zambia or not Zambia, which is maybe fair or unfair. But obviously, outside of Zambia, there's the Kamativi lithium and Bulawayo gold projects in Zimbabwe, Kalahari copper belt projects in Botswana, then Thurber and Glenova in Nevada in South Africa. But in Zambia, I would say, you know, possibly the asset that is top of the investor mind is Lwansobi. So Galileo owns a 75% interest. Roughly a year ago, you announced an inferred mineral resource for the project, and quite a large mineral resource. And I guess work has been continuing since towards the idea of either a potential open pit mine plan or potentially an asset sale. Which would you think would be preferable at the moment?
Well, I've always been of the opinion nothing's for sale.
Nothing's for sale. It's all yours.
But good mining situations are bought, they're not sold. I just get on with things, Charles. And Lwansobi, you're absolutely right. It's about 9 kilometres from one of the biggest operations in the world, Mufulira.
Indeed.
That's a big plus, and especially now that's been acquired by our IRH, Abu Dhabi company, investment company. So that's all good news. It's really, I was drawn to it when I saw that quote of 75 million tonnes, it's 2.3%. That's in the archives, but that was enough to say to me, gee whiz, that's a project, that's a big mine. And then you look at the deepest hole, 1,250 metres deep, which was over 2%. Now you're saying to yourself, there's some verification there of depth. And we set Addison on in London to actually look at the ore body. Their geologists came down, our geologists came, and we went to the core sheds. And when we got to the core sheds, lo and behold, we found that one horizon is, and you know, one can forgive the past people, one horizon, black, kind of a black shale it was. And we ran the XRF of it. We got the benefit of an XRF, and in those days they hadn't. lo and behold, it started spitting out some 2%.
Lovely.
Lovely. So that was value add. It was something we hadn't obviously paid for anything, really. It was deposits paid for the project and the admission to the project. But in terms of the magnitude, it seemed significant. So then we didn't like the stripping ratio of a potential pit. Of course, how are you going to do this as a junior?
Exactly. You know, yeah.
You don't go and tell the market, we've got this 70-odd million potential, and do you mind coughing up 50 million for pure risk exploration? They just don't like that. And that's the way to get lapped out of it. And then always the problem that, oh, well, you know, the big boys were there before. What? How can you find something they couldn't?
Well, yeah. Well, the answer is you're better at it as a general.
Yeah.
The juniors, well, that, you know.
You won't remember, but I mean, you can imagine that in the days when you used to sit between the investment was done a little bit differently. And you'd sit, if I go back to the Calamila day, 12 years, I always remember sitting there saying I was going to find this big ore body at Calamila and Kiwara Resources. And they sat there and said, but Anglo's been there 10 years and found nothing. And, you know, they've had a full team there, so you're going to find it. Where did you go to geology? Oh, well, I'm a miner, you know. So it's the same. It's the same setup that, you know, you've got to face that. It's a tall order for our junior market, finance big exploration projects. So you'll see that the pattern of our investments in most of our, you know, the operations and situations we're in, there's something small that may lead to cash flow whilst you do the bigger work and fund the bigger work.
Yeah.
And that's the situations I like to find myself in, Charles. And equally, I like to follow up the big boys. I really like to follow up with the big boys because, you know, size matters to them. It doesn't necessarily matter to us. And the sort of, you know, the potential of an open pit at Lewin-Sobey was just of no interest whatsoever to our predecessors and to the Mottolera bunch. Absolutely zilch interest. To us, it represented our starter for 10. So anyway, our starter for 10 was somewhat flawed because it had got a 30-meter pre-strip. And that's expensive again for any junior.
Indeed.
To ship 30 meters of muck, you know, for a big
old, the ground.
Well, for an open pit.
Yeah.
So, you know, skin you alive, that sort of thing, wouldn't it? It's difficult to get investment. So we coupled with this black shale that we found, is that in the upper reaches? And just one throwaway remark in an old report, Charles. It said in the report was dated, I think, 2007. It said, not much, drill several surface holes, not much ore. Now, what does not much ore mean?
No, well, exactly.
It must mean some. So yeah, in 2007, no, not much ore might be very different to 2010 to 2024. So we drilled, and of course, not much ore. There was some ore. There's low grade, there's medium grade, and the pre-strip is no longer 30 meters. And we've had a report in the last few days which has identified more by reworking all the logs. So what might have been a very iffy, small open pit 4.5 years is in actual fact 5 years, probably will be 5 years now. And will be a nice little sort of start of the 10. The plan when we bought it, because the drilling down to 500 is not bad at all, Charles, not bad at all. So the plan then was to go X the open pit,
right,
do a decline and access that ore and truck it out.
Name of the game.
And then maybe we pulled up stumps and called it a day.
Right.
But during that period, of course, we'd drill in the big target, diverting some cash flow to the big target. And if the big target comes in, it's Mottolera's and Mopani's next mine. So it's A, B, and C, and B gets negated by success with C, you know, the deeper drilling. That's the plan, and it's all fairly immediate, and it's attracting an awful lot of interest because not only are Mopani close by, and there's two or three other operators who've got plants within 20 kilometres.
Yeah, and then you're assuming often these plants have excess processing capacity as well, and they just want ore to be able to chuck through it, don't they?
Well, they're short of, they've got plants, but no ore.
Yeah, indeed.
A very little ore, which is, I'd sooner be the other way around, ore and no plant, you know.
It's
a better outcome.
Yeah, well, it is really interesting, isn't it? I mean, a lot of these mines are, you know, looking for more ore, want more ore, and it's just not around, is it? And so you've just got a plant that you can't, you know, and often these are like, nowadays, a lot of the modern plants are more modular. So if you want to, you can just pack it up and move it. But a lot of these plants, they can't be moved. Or if they can, it's a lot of work and expense.
Well, people, you're absolutely right. My career has shown me, Charles, and the number of times people have said we'll relocate the plant. Quite frankly, it's cheaper to build a new one.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, by the time it's the rollers are all worn on the conveyors, the conveyor belts all old. You've got to dig up the foundry, you know, and a lot of the money is in the civil engineering, not in the steelwork.
Yeah.
So, you know.
No, that's true. Yeah.
So, and especially in this day and age. So I'm not convinced. You know, the Chinese, for example, they're very, very sort of forthright, and they've got a way of building plants and looking for ore. And as I say, I'd sooner have ore and no plant than a plant and no ore.
Yeah.
So there are target plants to send our material to. So I think if you looked at Lew and Sobey, it's what I like in business, options. Yeah. If you haven't got optionality, Charles, you're struggling.
Indeed. So if your optionality is, you can do essentially whatever you want. You don't know what's going to come next, but you do know that you've got it. Essentially, you have a plan, but you'll adapt it as you go. Yeah.
No better summary.
Indeed. Let's move off Lew and Sobey, in which I think hopefully there'll be some official news in the next few days and weeks. Shinganda. So this is the next asset that I looked at. So this covers part of a 10-kilometer structural trend with two previously developed small-scale copper-gold mines. There was a little bit of historic drilling, but recent assays came back, and there was an intercept 50.3 meters at 1.54% copper and a peak of 33.9 grams per ton of gold from a grab sample in an exploration pit. And then there was this one hole, this hole SHDD017. Seemed to be very, very interesting. I mean, you were looking at for an IOCG deposit potential. What's the next steps at Shinganda?
Still are, Charles. Very nice summary, by the way. Yeah, still are. I think it is a true IOCG. We were preceded there by Vale, the Brazilian big mining company.
Ah, well, I didn't know. Okay.
Yeah.
You learn something new.
And it stuck to that model I just talked about. We like to follow up big companies with big databases. And that's exactly what we've done there as well. And they put a lot of emphasis and a lot of stock on the what they call the Gerhard Trend. Obvious target for us to start drilling the Gerhard Trend, and we had the same as them. We had a couple of good holes and we had some disappointing holes.
So we
couldn't figure
exploration.
It out.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exploration, but didn't figure. And we couldn't figure it out to save our lives. So we reworked all the raw inputs for the geophysics. And ended up with, yes, the Gerhard Trend had got some importance, but the splays off the Gerhard Trend were even more important. And they were probably the pathways, the conduits, the fluids. And so we tested a couple, and then we started coming in with these really good results, really nice results. We recognized an area of gold, those really high gold figures you talked about. That's contained in hematite, and that's sort of a different target up to the northwest on its own. But below that hematite, and that is, we thought... And our local geologist reported that we'd found breccia systems. Pretty exciting when you're talking about IOCGs. And so that was good. We drilled and we started repeating the results. And what we've recognized now is a trend, the lowest 2.5 kilometers, at the best possibly 6 kilometers. It's only about 70 to 80 meters deep. And it's anchorite, been identified as anchorite. So we've actually got a very defined target, which is like a slug of cheddar injected up at the side of the Gerhard Fault as a very defined target, and we're going to drill it. And that target, if you do the simple math, could be anywhere between 15 and 25 million tons at between 1.5 to 2%. So very nice position, Charles.
Cool for
very nice position. And we hopefully will be starting in not too distant future that drilling program, because as I say, the target is so well defined.
Sorry, Colin, so you've got the target defined. You want to keep drilling. How long do you reckon until the next program starts up?
I guess that's...
Sorry to try and pin you down.
Yeah. Well, you know, we've got to start it up within the next 2 months. We have to start it up. We're procuring rigs now.
Yeah.
We have to go for this target. But now, we talked about IOCGs, and the intrusives in the northwest corner and the southeast corner, we think that Vale maybe have stopped short. And we want to test those, because those intrusives could be where they all pulled below because it couldn't get through. And then the terrific forces which drove it from, you know, when the time the ore bodies were being formed, that's when they went through the Gerhard Trend and into these splays and into the anchorite, you know, what wasn't anchorite then, but, you know, what's ended up anchorite now is where the ore is deposited. And strangely enough, there's no gold there, or very little, not as much as you would expect. So we still feel whilst that's a very viable target, quite a nice project, a hell of a nice project, and could continue, as I say, 6 kilometers. The IOCG target remains. Is it below the intrusive? How many of these splays are live?
Indeed.
As you go east, and then there's another phenomenon. As you go east, the copper increases, the gold decreases. As you go west, that's where you get as high as, you know, an ounce of gold per ton. Conversely, as you go to the east, it will be, you know, you get 3-5% copper with only a smell of gold, 0.2, 0.3. So this is a very interesting system. It's very fertile. But the good news is we've identified the target, which is in that range, 15 to 25 million tons of rock, grade of 1.5 to 2%. And again, it'll all be copper. So it's that, and a stripping ratio of about 1 to 1. So this really is a very, very nice standalone target within a very interesting environment, which is not yet fully tested by any means or concepts argued through.
And I guess the same question with as you would have with Lansomi, which is, what's the optionality? Do you have like a grand plan for Shinganda, or is it something that, again, you're keeping open options to?
Well, you know, I use those words as just before I finished speaking there, which the concept is yet to be argued through.
So you're not sure.
We've recruited Mike Ullman, who was head of Anglo Africa. He works with us and he's particularly interested in this project. We've got a new young graduate who's taken MSc graduate from Camborne, I think. I'm not sure whether it's Imperial College of Camborne, but a really bright boy who joined us. He's got a master's degree and he's just working through every ounce of information as his project. Martin Gallen, of course.
Yeah.
Then we've got the local geologists. So, you know, you've got young, old, local, highly experienced, new to business. And then we recruited also a guy called Hunter Kennedy, who's really top class. He's out there at the moment as well. So it's easy to prioritize, Charles. We're going to drill that cheddar cheese I talked about, the wedge.
Indeed.
But yeah. the rest of it has got to be conceptualized and modeled. And I think we haven't got to generate new geophysics, but I think we've got to rework the old ones still more.
Yeah.
Very excited about Shinganda. Right.
Well, this is a general idea with Galileo, or just in general, you're acquiring these assets from, you know, a major generally who've done a lot of work already, but they've just abandoned it because they don't think that there's anything there. And you come in and you look at it and you think, actually, they've missed something. Seems to be the idea.
That was Calambila. That's most things I've done in my life. They've got little patience, you know, the majors. And often when they leave a country, it's not because they don't like the technical aspects, just because we don't want to work in that country anymore. I think that's why Valley upstumps. That's why BHP upstumps on the IOCJ model in the late 90s, I think it was. So often the reason for going isn't technical. And behind them, you know, I mean, at Shinganda, at Calambila, for example, like in Calambila, I bet I inherited $25 million worth of work. If you started from a standing start at Valley, put $10 million worth of work.
Sometimes it's a super cycle, isn't it? Like a lot of the miners, they kind of live and die by paying out their dividends. And then if you have, you know, a few years where mining is just out of fashion, the share prices crash of the majors and they feel like they have to stop exploration work. And then sometimes that helps out as well. And then, you know, if you're a junior, you can swoop in and get the assets for cheap, which I guess is something else that you're, you know, seem to be pretty skilled at doing. Right.
When they make up their mind to go, Charles, they have to go and nothing will stop them. And these, you know, what you've also got to remember, what people don't appreciate, the poor old junior, I have to report every single hole I drill.
Yeah.
If you're one of those major mining companies, you just talk about your target. You don't talk about individual holes.
I think there's so much historical drilling information which is never reported to the public, you know, which is just there to be found. Would you say? I mean, it seems to be for me anyway.
You know what drove me to Calambila? I just, in one of the reports of the geologist, it said there could be a possibility of 30 million tons at about 1.5% copper oxide. And I said to our heavy lifting. I thought, I'll have that. You know, yeah. I mean, it might not be much good for a major, but it's very good for us.
Yeah, indeed. Well, this is the other thing, isn't it? Because like a lot of, I guess, especially with copper deposits, there's a lot of licenses out there, which maybe the majors aren't particularly interested in, but which a junior or a mid-cap company would find this is a very nice little project. There seem to be many of those out in Zambia, Zimbabwe at the moment.
Absolutely. That you've hit it on the nose. And as I say, you get in the archives there and you know, I mean, sometimes they go with fixed ideas, the majors. Mm. And if after 2 or 3 years, you're not approaching those fixed ideas, it doesn't matter if you've had some nice smells, we're off, we don't like it.
Yeah, well, almost like often they, trying to read the words, that they go, right, we're going to spend X million on this patch of ground, right? And if we don't hit sort of like Y target, that's it, we're done. Which is madness to me, but apparently that's how they decide to work. I suspect that's also why Virginia's do so much better at exploring.
Well, that's right. I mean, can you imagine a pharmaceutical industry? They say we're going to start something to cure Alzheimer's disease, but they don't give up when they...
They get to the end of phase two and they're like, wow, this is very promising, but we're out for this one. We'll start again with something new. Yeah, madness.
It's the same business a pharmaceutical is, you know, a lot of risk money, a lot of risk capital goes in at the early stage.
Yeah.
And they take you all the way before they quit. And often in a business, you see, and that's why, I mean, we're getting a bit philosophical here, but that's why, you know, if I turn the clock back 25 years, your major mining companies would have had 100 geologists on the books.
You know,
some of them now, we've only got half a dozen. It's all spreadsheet guys, and the geologists go and look at advanced projects, and they're not interested in generating anything. So the style of working from the majors has changed.
Well, the budgets for exploration, the majors, they've more than halved since the 1990s, you know, based on what I know, which is just, given that we're going to need to find more copper, it's just madness. But it does mean if you've got a good copper asset, and you've got, you know, several, then presumably at some point that's going to correct, the market will correct for it. Northwest Zambia, joint venture with Cooper Lemon, the consultancy, to explore for copper exploration license, 28001 HQ, it's a LAL, that was, again, Northwest Zambia. This license covers 52,000 hectares. It's a bit of a beast, and it's associated with the Western Foreland geological district we were talking about. So ideally, you're looking for the Kakula deposits. Yeah, I mean, well, that's the general idea, and it's what you're looking for. You've got this joint venture. Galileo agreed it's going to earn the 65% interest by making a cash payment and then funding some exploration. What's the plan there? What's going on with the Northwest Zambia venture?
Well, the guy I mentioned, the two guys I mentioned, are out there at the moment. You know, it's not easy ground to walk. Mm. And when I say there's not many geologists walked it, it's probably true, you know. And you don't want a degree in geology, mining, or anything, really. If you actually look at the Western Foreland as imaged by Ivanhoe and down to the border, because they've got most of the resources there, Ivanhoe resources. And then if you look at Ivanhoe resources as acquisitions in Angola, put a line through those and it goes bang through 28001. It's the trend, the Western Foreland, the fold and thrust belt is something, well, people don't talk about, but the Western Foreland fold and thrust belt go right through those licenses and right through other licenses we're involved in as well. So that's the most exciting exploration ground in the world, because proof of concept has been due to the First Quantum, African pioneer. That's proof of concept. Now, who's going to be the first to actually find an ore body? The Graben, which has got all the features, which in actual fact produces mineralization.
Yes.
And that's what we're doing. I mean, I don't want to give too many secrets away, but we're finding some unique features already, which come as a surprise. They talk about redex boundaries and that. We're identifying some of those which have just not thought of before or seen before. So as I sit in this discussion with you, I'm convinced that the northwest of Zambia will be the new Chile. I think that it will transform Zambia, and I think it will take the president closer to his ambition of 3 million tons of copper per year, you know, because, I mean, Kamoa, you know, I mean, I don't know if he's well known, but they're running at 5% copper.
Yeah.
Absolutely beautiful mines. But what's not well known is the ore body is as flat as a pancake. So you actually...
I didn't know that. So, no, I knew the grade, but no, I didn't.
Yeah, you put the incline. I mean, you know, metal mining is hard, Charles. It's tortuous. The ore body's up, it's down, it's across, it's all over the place. It's there, it's there today, it's gone tomorrow.
No,
it's flat like a pancake, like a coal mine.
There was a beautiful photo must have been a year ago now, the CEO and people were complaining he wasn't doing much. And he sent a picture on Twitter just covered in mud and grime and dirt. And he was like digging up a hole. What more do you want? But yeah, no, it is. I think, you know, like I'm sitting in my home office and, you know, where you are. It's easy to look at it and go, why does it take so long? Why is it so difficult? And a lot of people don't realize that a lot of it is just hard graft.
It's just hard graft. You know, when I talk to you, I always take my memory back here and there. I remember sitting in a famous Switzerland town, sitting across a guy with a spreadsheet who was interrogating me beyond belief. He was all at 26 with this spreadsheet, and he was telling me what we do here and what we must do there. And I looked across the lake from this beautiful office and said, I could mine anything from here. And, you know, You've hit it right on the nose. This is a tough game, boots on floor. But, you know, back to that that particular license, it's very well placed. But the Kamal mine is flat. They've just got these great big trucks going in and out there as though it was a coal mine. They've got a very sort of basic mining method called board and pillar, which you use in the South African coal mines. It's basic. It's a lovely height and flat, 3.5 meters high. So you can move so much ground, Charles. You can imagine these twin boom drilling machines pulling a 3 meter pull, big dimension, 7-10 meter wide rooms. They shipped a lot of ground and they're now the second richest mine in the world, you know, doing something like $400 or $500 million a quarter.
Happy day.
And growing. I mean, it's an enormous success for Mr. Friedland and Ivanhoe. And you can tell that he intends to duplicate that success in Angola. And I'm sure he must have aspirations for Zambia too.
Must do. Well, I mean, on that license, phase one exploration, the idea is you want to find a mineral resource of at least 500,000 tons of contained copper, internal rate of return of at least 25%, and a payback period not exceeding 42 months. Do you think that, obviously it's early days now, but how likely do you think that is?
That would represent disappointment, Land.
What disappointment that would be.
That would be a disappointing, and that would represent failure. I mean, when you're talking about the projects that we're looking for, they're massive, they're high grade. But again, the good news is plan A, plan B. The surface Kolwezi style mineralization in 2801, sacks of it, old artisanal mining. So on the one hand, you talk Western Foreland, but on the other hand, you talk Kalambilis type, you know, sentinel type mineralization on the surface. So again, there's low hanging fruit on surface, which obviously as a junior, that's the stuff we'll pursue first. You know, and that if we can build up a mineable tonnage there, you've got to remember that there are mines not very far away, very hungry, big mills. You just have to start an open cast mine and not build all the infrastructure.
I'm guessing, you literally build a road and then blast, crush, potentially sort, and then just take it to a different plant for processing.
Absolutely. And then down below, of course, on the Kamoa style mineralization, well, Western Foreland mineralization, Kamoa or Kolwezi, you're talking big grades. And in the case of Kolwezi, of course, there'll be the presence not only of copper, but cobalt. Yeah. So, as you say, it's a huge license with huge opportunities. We're a small budget company, as all the juniors are. So we've got to go the low-hanging fruit first, and that will be probably a surface drilling program at the more obvious targets, whilst we pursue the model, if you like, of how that Western Foreland is presenting itself down into Zambia through Angola.
Just more generally, would you say, on all of these licenses in Zambia that you have, is there more major interest than there was before, about a year or two ago? Do you think there's potential for joint ventures left, right and centre, or is it going to be a little bit longer?
Well, I've got a personal belief. The world is changing, you know. I don't think we're going to recognise this world that the Rose talks about for many more years. I mean, joint venture, we juniors are sitting on something that the majors want.
Yeah.
The life cycle has been, as we said, they're now going to have big exploration departments. The life cycle has been to basically put some money into the juniors, 8-year earning program, spend about 4 or 5 million. Then, unfortunately, the juniors got to find too much cash and they're diluted to a net smelter return.
Yep, and then they die off. Yeah.
Yeah. That's not going to happen much longer. Even the traders, you know, the big companies, better not mention names, it's not right, but the big trading companies, what I'm seeing now in the metals industry, base metals and this battery development, is that car makers in particular are going off, end users are going off to try and do deals with the junior mining companies or mid-sized mining companies who've got deposits. That's forcing the traders now to go into earlier exploration where they'd only sort of finance when they were expecting to get a stream of metal and finance that stream. That's changing. They're taking a robust view. The majors are now realizing that instead of sitting back like they used to, I mean, the rules in the old days were, let the high risk go to the junior market, we'll buy the successors. And the standard for success was an inferred deposit, often with an indicated resource. Now, if you wait that long, the deposit will be gone. Yeah. So the majors are becoming less risk averse. They're coming in earlier. They'll be taking projects earlier. And the traders are taking the advantage, and the traders are seeing here's an opportunity. If we get in now, we'll be part of the big bonuses that come from disposal. So the whole nature of our business is change and changing, particularly over the last 5 years.
Yeah, well, it is big changes. I mean, it is very interesting to see. Obviously, the juniors in mining have had a bad couple of years in terms of financing. that with copper in particular, and with various other metals too, the majors need to replace their current sources. They're not going to have a choice. And what I find particularly interesting is that previously, where they had a threshold for investment, which was quite high, as you say, that seems to be dropping down a little bit, and there seems to be more flexibility in what they'll go into than there was previously. Previously, it was almost like, if you didn't meet every one of their requirements, they weren't interested. Now, they'll be more willing to engage in a conversation. But yeah, it's interesting to see. I mean, outside of Zambia, you've got the Kalahari Copper Belt licenses, and it really interesting stuff. I mean, I know your immediate neighbor, Cobre, got selected for the BHP Explore program, which, you know, it is a good sign in itself. But there's been some scout drilling, there's been some interesting holes. But basically, you've got these new targets on PL392018, and you've got this area that's analogous to you know, various other prospects. So, you know, having sold some nearby licenses to Sandfire in 2021, I'm assuming potentially is that the strategy for the Kalahari licenses, sell them to Sandfire in the future? Should they be what you look for?
The Kalahari is somewhat different to Zambia and Botswana and other places. You know, it shows itself to be 5 to 10 meters thick, around about 1.7% copper with some silver, probably about 15 grams, you know, half an ounce of silver.
Right.
You've got to generate an awful lot of development, Charles, with a vertical ore body in order to make enough mining room to fill a big mill. And you'll know that Sandfire have been very successful in their ramp up and their first mine, we used to call it T3, they've given it a name, forget what the name is. They wrapped it up very nicely and they're in business. We're probably a bit far away from them. In terms of Cobra, license 253 is right, is in the middle of Cobra, believe it or not. And then licenses 39 and 40 are not unlike A4 of Sandfire. And then there's the Sandfire licenses, of course, which are joint venture with Sandfire, which have got predetermined takeouts.
Yeah.
The Kalahari is usually very, very, very interesting. And we will be drilling or joint venturing with most of our positions there in the not too distant future. But we've reserved budget for it and we'll be there. But we subordinate it to those tremendous positions, Shinganda, the Northwest, and the Kamativi. So yes, we'll be drilling, but don't want to prioritize the...
It's not the priority then at the moment.
It's not the priority, but boy, they're, you know, if we... Some companies would die for those positions.
Indeed.
But from a proximity point of view, I think others will assist us in the expenditure and bring them forward. And licenses 39 and 40 are extremely prospective. And as I say, 243 are in the middle of Cobre anyway.
So you believe that there's going to be a joint venture of some kind. Others are going to help you develop these ones.
You know, others will be welcome to help us. I mean, you know, we've not had any dialogue with anybody specifically other than Sandfire. We've spent money on the fancy geochemistry they've got nowadays. We've spent money on geophysics and then more money on geophysics. We know we've got the domes. We know we're not a million miles from Mineral. They came up with some decent results the other day. So we don't want to give this shop away at all. We've got obvious...
You don't want to give anything away. You want to keep hold of it all.
Yeah, that's right. Keep hold of it. We're dog in manger. But we're going to drill it, Charles. It's a little early. License 253 is obvious. But right. The other ones I think I want to add value to before we talk to anybody.
Yeah. I think the Sandfire... Is it called Buffeo? The Sandfire, what they've renamed it.
Yeah, and they've done very well, you know. I like that company. We used to deal with Carl Simic. Carl left, and it's carried on very robustly. And they had to replace this mine. They've got a very, very good mine in Australia, which was pouring out money. And they've had to replace it. And it looks like they're doing a hell of a good job in the Kalahari with their first mine.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is the thing, isn't it? It's meant to be the juniors do some exploration, and then the bigger companies come and give you a hand. That's the way it's always has worked. And, you know, hopefully it'll continue to in the future. Yeah. But so Zimbabwe, then we've got Kamativi lithium project, which I find very interesting, then Bulawayo gold. So, you know, it'd be through various subsidiaries. I won't go through it on the podcast, but essentially Kamativi is adjacent to and also along the strike from the historic Kamativi tin tantalum mine. And that was in operation from 1936 to 1994. Produced 37,000 tons of tin and 3,000 tons of tantalum. And Kamata Gold Corp is essentially restarting operations there. What's it in? We had an update recently on Kamativi, and assays from ALS Chemex for 10-hole phase 1 angle drill program, and it all looks really promising. So yeah. We're looking at like lithium through the microschist host rock, as opposed to solene being within the pegmatite, which I think is, well, I know a fair bit about lithium. Generally, lithium is hosted just in the pegmatite, not in the host rock. That's quite rare, isn't it? It feels that, quite rare.
That threw us completely. That was just not expected. The grades don't shoot the lights out, but the continuity of continuous grade, you know, intersection after intersection, lithology after lithology, is quite exciting. And the first 20 meters we drilled went through some really nice stuff. So again, the shareholders were not overwhelmed, but we were delighted, because really what we were doing, Charles, was just firing some holes in the pegmatite just to see whether we're in the right land. And, you know, we found this tin, the background tin, and there's even background rare earths. We're told, and pretty secretive now, you know, the exploration is in Zimbabwe, but the microschist occurrence is in another occurrence as well, which is basically growing very nice, I think, in the ownership of the Chinese now. So it has been found elsewhere, but spodumene it is. We've got spodumene, and we've got other sources of lithium. We've got lithium in association with tin, and we've got tin isolated. And we've got 500 square kilometers to go at, Charles.
Yeah.
Yeah, the license is massive. And you have to avoid at our level. And, you have to avoid at our level. I call it keyhole exploration. And keyhole exploration is when you just jump in and start drilling when you get the first smell. It's not right. It's not the way to work, but it's so tempting if you're a junior, Charles. It's so tempting.
So tempting not to do the surface exploration.
Yeah, because
else,
if it's right, we've got it here, we can announce it, and you're always aware that a silent company in a junior venture capital market like we're in, no news is bad news.
Well, I think it's, you know, I mean, I will be honest with you, because regardless of whichever company it is, yes, the right thing to do is to do all of the preliminary work first. But as an investor, it's very boring, because you just have to wait for you to say, right, now we know where we're going to drill, and then we're going to drill, and then we'll give you BSAs, and you just want to go, no, just put a hole in the ground. Obviously, that quick fire route tends not to work out very well, but you don't like waiting.
Well, you didn't wait, Charles. You know that. I mean, basically, no news release for a month, and you're in bad books with your shareholders.
Indeed.
And it's a lot easier to get in bad books with your shareholders than it is to get out of bad books with your shareholders. So I'm not one for getting into bad books. I'm going to avoid it. So I think we did the right thing there. We identified the pegmatites, and what we have learned and should have known, but we had to test the theory that if you've got standard pegmatites and they're very uniform, you're not going to find anything, Charles. Mm-hmm. You've got to see a lot of action, and they call them discordants. And then they don't show the discordancy until probably the 25 or 30 meters down.
Right.
Soil geochemistry don't work. The Chinese have found that out, because it's generally leached out. So I'm afraid mapping is more productive than geochem, and geophysics just won't help you.
Right.
So really, you're mapping for discordant pegmatites, and you're mapping for obviously coloration that you'll see with your spodumenes.
Mm.
But we took a Chinese group out there. And there we were looking at it, and we saw little fluorspar filaments and that. And these guys could spot it. They've just got eyes like hawks. They're brilliant.
They're
brilliant explorers.
In Zimbabwe in particular, obviously, there's premier African minerals. They're trying to get lithium out of the ground still. But I think it's like $2 billion worth of investment going into a country from China just to get lithium operations up and running. So, you know, you're in the right country if you want to get lithium out of the ground. And the Chinese, they're so good at stopping it.
You're so right, Charles. You're so right. And you should see around Kamativi. It is an hive of activity.
Yeah.
And we're sitting in the middle of it, you know.
Well, I think a lot of lithium...
You've got to do things right.
Well, a lot of the lithium there, you know, historically, it just wasn't very valuable, right? But now it is. Even now in the market that we have now, it's more valuable than it was before. And again, you have all of these processing plants that have, you know, capacity but no ore. So if you can prove you've got something, you know, the optionality there will be huge. You should imagine anyway.
Yes, everybody goes on about spodumene because it's a new word that everybody's learned what to talk about. There are other sources. There are other mineralization types. And we've got both of those, and there's a place in Zimbabwe which is actually working them. But everybody's got this spodumene thing. And so plants, again, have got to be flexible and be able to handle all mineralization types.
Which is
and also the tin and lithium at the same time.
Yeah, well, I you know, which, you know, I, hopefully people have learned now building a plant to do all of those things is incredibly difficult. And to be able to do with, you know, spodumene, for example, but also lepidolite, have a tantalum off circuit, you're looking, you know, if you have within the schist rock as well, it's a nightmare to do. But what it does mean is that your capital expenditure is very high. Once you've done that, you want to get as much ore through the plant as possible. You know, and therefore, when you're sitting there with this Camotivi lithium project, which again is in early stages, but looking very promising, you're very well set up. I mean, in Bulawayo as well, you're looking for gold there. Are you not? I mean, that again,
well, early the first thing we did when we acquired BC Ventures was to fly it. And, you know, unusually for a junior company, we've done a bit of flying around up various projects, you know, in the group. And it's very unusual because it's expensive business. We spent, I think it was $230,000 on that order and flying it. And we've got some beautiful anomalies around the Queen's Mine, which is 24 kilometers north, yeah, more or less due north, it's northwest a little bit, of Bulawayo. In so doing, with this geophysics, we also found that ultramafic nickel potential, you know. So we don't talk about it much because we've subordinated it to the gold, because the gold is an obvious target. But that is now drill ready. We followed the geophysics up with Geochem, and we've now got targets, gold targets in Bulawayo, which stretch from Queens and a long way beyond. Yep. And what we're looking for is not Queens, of course. Queens are, you know, these are high grade and quartzy type ore bodies, which, you know, they go down maybe 30, 50 meters, the artisans do. And Queens is a proper mine. I think there's about 30,000 ounces a year, and I might be wrong. We're not looking for that, Charles. We're looking for a really big, wide target, which could be open pittable, you know, 2 to 5 grams. So we've been very careful again to select the right targets, and geochemistry is helping us with that. But with a gold price of 2,300, it's nice to be sitting on the strike lengths that we've got ready for drilling.
Wow. Gold and copper both look like they could go a little bit higher. You know, I mean, copper in particular, but gold seems to be the appetite in China for gold is just insatiable.
Yeah. Why we've got this geopolitical unrest, we're going to get golds. But, you know, whilst I've got gold properties, I'm more leery of gold than I am copper. Because, you know, if you believe in Armageddon, this is another Robert Friedland, I ain't quoting the guy, I'm quoting him again. But he said, if you believe in Armageddon, invest in gold. If you believe in a bright new world, invest in copper. And I believe in a bright new world. And but I mean, you cannot walk away from the type of project we purchased down there, the top end gold projects. But copper, you know, I mean, going back to copper, the demand is worrying enough, the increase in demand. But to add the supply side almost falling badly and the immediate prospects being so poor, copper could be in serious trouble. You know, we fought wars over oil. We might be fighting wars over gold, but copper.
Well, we had this conversation when we were talking about African Pioneer last week, and every major, whether it's Rio Tinto or BHP, every copper trader like Trey Figueroa, everybody within the copper space has been telling the world there's going to be a huge copper problem in the 2020s. And they've been saying it for years, and it feels like nobody's listening. But then on top of that, it feels like the majors haven't spent any money on exploration, really. They seem to have had a lot of words to say about it, and then they didn't bother spending money dealing with the problem. And now they're going to have to spend a lot more, a lot quicker, to solve it when it comes up.
And following up on that, our particular sector always used to be a call option to metals which were thought to be having a bright future. And we're just not seeing the benefit of all this forecasting you're talking about, because the junior markets, I mean, you know, little old Galileo, a penny point two, and you know, announces that it's actually found out, is part of, and has discovered a major new copper environment. If I go back to the 2005, 2009, 2010, 2012, when we, you know, Kalumbila days, that would have set the world alight.
Yeah, of course it would have.
Just emphasize, this is something you and I spoke about the other day. London, Sydney, Toronto, Melbourne need a new win. They need a new success by a junior mining company in this space.
Yes.
Because the majors are gently doing their work. They don't care anyway. It's up to us. Let us go out and struggle to raise our money. And the investors are wary of investing in these juniors, because we've yet to deliver them a new big project for quite a long time now.
And I think it's probably also fair, you know, as a CEO, your job is to market your company or your companies to investors. So everybody is saying that they've got something great and wonderful. But, you know, often you don't deliver because there's risk in exploration. That's the name of the game. Now, obviously, with Galileo in particular, there's been a lot of de-risking because there's been a lot of work done on the assets already. But it seems to be the case that, you know, when everybody is special, nobody is. And at some point, someone has to deliver a win. We are overdue one. It feels like we're overdue one anyway. There's got to be somebody going to find something major. I'm betting it will be Zambia. I really do.
I wouldn't disagree with you. And I think it's going to be the Northwest. And not necessarily. There are other places showing a lot of likelihood too. But I wouldn't agree. I would agree with you that Zambia will probably be the source. I'd like it to be one of ours. But I think we'll all sort of, our fortune will change by success of any one of these AIM or standard listing companies with a major project around the world. And it is a venture capital market. And small companies haven't enjoyed good times.
No.
But I'm still amazed, like you are, that when I look at the fundamentals for copper, it's being pushed down our throats every day of our life now. I mean, I don't need to talk about it anymore.
No, yeah. We know. We all know. It's just not the market isn't responding.
And nobody would buy into it because we should, little Galileo, should be a call option to copper.
Yeah.
And if it's a call option to copper and you believe in copper, it shouldn't be languishing at a market cap of about 9 million.
Well, I mean, I've only got two more questions, and they are Zambia focused, actually. The first is on energy and power cuts and whether they could affect you, because it seems to be that the country is experiencing issues with power. And the second is on drilling. Now, obviously, you've got a lot of drill targets ready to go, or you currently are. There doesn't seem to be enough drill rigs in the country for the amount of drilling the companies want to do. Would you say that's fair or not? It seems to be, you know, what I'm hearing from other operators is that they're trying to get hold of contractors and they're already booked up.
Well, we're not too bad at getting them. But I guess we've got long-standing associations, so we could probably get a bit sooner than a newcomer on the block. But no, that hasn't been a problem. Assaying is a bit of a problem, you know. Can be very, very slow turnaround, both in South Africa and Zambia. Assaying's a bit of a problem.
A few months, generally. Procuring
good geologists isn't easy, but we're managing it. And I mean, I don't think it's commonly realized, but every time we've made a senior appointment or a senior junior farm appointment, we've let the press, you know, we've done an RNS, and we're very, very highly staffed up now in Zambia, particularly Zimbabwe as well. So we've responded to that. But no, it's not a problem we've got yet. Other than assaying being an absolute nuisance. And as for power, gee, they've had the biggest droughts, you know, I mean.
And it's just all hydroelectric. It's like 90% hydroelectric, the country.
That's right. It just hasn't rained, Charles.
I know, which is, it's funny when you hear companies saying they aren't able to drill because of the rainy season, which almost hasn't happened.
That's right. I mean, the other day, it should be getting a bit drafty up there now. It was 29 degrees only, I think, yesterday, the day before. And it should be, you know, it should be getting quite a bit cooler by now.
Well,
and
you know,
we should still be tailing off. The rain should about tail off, but there hasn't been any to tail off.
No. So, you know, I think you're in for a brilliant season and a brilliant 2024 at Galileo. And I'm hoping, you know, by the end of the year, between the operational advances and potential announcements and the copper supply gap and, you know, hopefully copper price rising, you're going to be way above your 1.2p that you are now.
I sincerely hope so for the loyal shareholders who have stayed with us. And they're very supportive. We've got a very, very good bulletin boards where, you know, the guys have sensible arguments with you and with one another. And we've got some really bright guys who understand the business, understand the metal, and I think the metals, and understand some of the problems management's got, whilst they still continue to beat us up when we don't perform, which is what we expect, and nothing what you wouldn't expect. We're not looking for sympathy, but our site is populated with people who understand the business, want to understand the business, and generally support us in what we're trying to do. So I'm very grateful for that.
Wonderful. Well, Colin, it's been lovely to chat to you, and I'm sure we'll have another chat in a week or two about another company of yours.
Thank you very much, Charles. You and I have only just started discussing, and it's very nice to talk to you. You've got a very high depth of understanding in our business, and it makes it, from this side of the discussion, it makes it very enjoyable. Thank you very much.
That's lovely to hear. And, you know, I think it's nice to talk to somebody who not only can talk about their own companies, but just about the wider politics and the wider metals, and just has a depth of experience that I can draw on as well, which is lovely.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. So Charles Archer and Colin Bird, thanks very much for your time.
Thank you. Thank you, Bill.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.